You've been listening to Counterspin on Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook, and coastradio.org. Coming up next is The Conversation. I'll be your host, Graham Nystrom. And today we're going to start off the show with a conversation with Astoria Mayor Bruce Jones, giving us the update about the plan to reopen Clatsop County. And call in with your questions. Let us know what your concerns are. 503-325-0010. I'll be handling the phone answering today, so if it's a little less than elegant, I hope you'll understand. Once you do call in, listen on your phone to the hold music, because there is a short delay. And let's get this party started in just a second. Thanks for listening. Good morning and welcome to The Conversation on Coast Community Radio. My name is Graham Nystrom. I'll be your host today. The Conversation is our weekly live call-in show where we look to hear from you, the members of the community who created and support this station, to chat about the topic of the week. And we've had the same topic now for going on 8, 9, 10 weeks, something like that, COVID-19. We're in a pandemic and things are changing all the time. One of the things that's currently changing is that there's a plan in place to reopen businesses in the county. And so give us a call with your comments, concerns, or questions. We're going to start off with a few minutes with Astoria Mayor Bruce Jones, and then he's going to stick around on the line, and you can ask him your questions, or you can just make general comments, or we can wax poetic about the situation we're all in and dealing with. 503-325-0010 is the number to call. Give us a ring, and let's get this thing started. Mayor Jones, are you there?
Good morning, Graham. I am here.
Good morning to you, and I'm going to just hand the radio waves off to you to give us your weekly update. Thanks for being here.
Okay, yeah, glad to be here, talking to the community, and as I think most of us know now, the governor approved Clatsop County yesterday for phase one reopening. And so we are reopened under phase one. I'll talk a little bit about what that means for us locally. I want to start off by just saying that the pain has been very real for many in our community. Some unemployed workers have still not received their unemployment benefits after 6.5 weeks. On the other hand, there's laid off workers in town who are making more money now on the unemployment with the combination of state unemployment and the federal $600 a week benefit than they were when they were working. Similarly, some businesses have been able to stay open because their business wasn't affected by the closure. Others obviously haven't been able to get any revenue at all during this period. Others have gotten EIDL loans or Paycheck Protection Program loans. Others, those loans haven't worked out for their business model. So there's a wide spectrum of impacts that have been felt in the community on both extremes. But what reopening does is it provides an opportunity for the businesses that have suffered tremendous losses over these past few months to begin operating again. And there's been a wide range of reactions to this decision. I've heard from local businesses in the last few days that are very excited to reopen today and are opening. Some have said they won't open for another few weeks. They're just going to kind of see how things go, either because they don't know if their business can be sustainable under the limitations placed on them by the state as far as physical distancing requirements and restaurant capacity, for example. And other businesses have just decided they're not comfortable opening for public health reasons yet, either for the concern about their employees or the public, and they're just going to wait a little bit longer. And I totally get all those reactions. It kind of mirrors the reactions all of us, just individuals in the community, have. Whether we're excited to get back out there or whether we're more comfortable staying home or anywhere in between. Now, there's nothing that requires the business to open under the reopening. There's nothing that requires individuals to begin going out and frequenting those businesses that are open if they feel safer staying home. We just encourage people to do what they're comfortable with. It's very important to note, I think, that the county's reopening plan was not approved because the virus is gone, or is fading away, or because we now have effective treatment for COVID-19, The county reopening plan was approved because it met a set of very specific requirements by the state. Those are requirements for isolation and quarantine facilities, for hospital capacity and PPE supply, for a testing regimen, for tracing capacity, and trends in hospitalization and emergency room visits. So some people have asked, why are we going to phase one reopening when we've had a number of cases of infection recently? And the answer is that's not the metric the state uses. The metric the state uses is trends in actual hospitalization. And we've been very fortunate that those impacted by those who have gotten the infection and had a positive test have not been hospitalized. So by the state standard, Clatsop County is prepared to respond to an outbreak that requires hospitalization. The state's guidelines for reopening for each of the different business sectors are intended to reduce the transmission of COVID-19 so we don't have an outbreak that requires hospitalization. So in other words, the guidelines are in place to prevent the worst outcomes so that we don't have to respond to the worst outcomes. And that's kind of how I think of it, because in my previous career in the Coast Guard, we worked to prevent devastating things from happening, and then we responded to devastating things when they did happen. And certainly from a cost perspective and from a human tragedy perspective, prevention is always preferable to response. But people tend to think that they're immune or invulnerable, and so often they don't follow guidelines. They don't wear life jackets, and then when the unexpected happens, their boat capsizes or they fall overboard, they drown. So some people, unfortunately, because they can't see the virus and they don't know anyone who's been hospitalized, because we've been blessed in our county with not having a significant outbreak or hospitalizations or fatalities. So some folks, it seems kind of odd to want to wear a mask around other people or to be so attentive washing their hands and disinfecting surfaces because they don't see the virus. But we know that doing those things is going to be essential as we reopen to prevent spreading the virus further and preventing a significant outbreak. Because if we get that significant outbreak that causes hospitalizations, it's just going to cause us to not be allowed to move to phase two in 21 days, or even worse yet, you know, cause us to have to close businesses down again. So my main message to the community is that all of us can help our businesses stay open and help our working neighbors keep their jobs and help our youth be able to go back to school again in the fall if we just get used to doing all those basic things that public health recommends. If we're successful in doing that, and you know, wearing a mask when you're around other people and washing your hands and disinfecting surfaces, then businesses will be able to get back on their feet, and we'll be able to move to phase two in June, and we'll stay. The economy will slowly recover, and we'll be healthy as well. So that's my main message. A few other things to talk about. Lodging is not included in phase one. Locally, Clatsop County and the jurisdictions within Clatsop County have been abiding by our locally imposed restriction on lodging for leisure travel. We don't allow that. Countywide, that's a countywide rule. However, the cities can individually choose not to follow that. You know, Seaside is having a meeting on Wednesday, on the 20th, a city council meeting specifically to discuss lodging. I know that Mayor Balance here in Warrenton, Mayor Brown and Gearhart, and myself in Astoria, we are strongly supporting all the municipalities in Clatsop County to maintain the current plan, which is not to allow lodging to begin to reopen to travelers, leisure travelers, until phase two is approved to begin in June. Folks have heard about a protest planned for Seaside tomorrow by some people who are upset about the fact that the state has decided to attempt to control the spread of coronavirus by imposing restrictions on businesses. And they are trying to get people to come from other areas of the state to Seaside. I would urge everyone to stay away from that. For people, that the worst thing that would happen is a bunch of people go to this protest to try to counter protest. It's just going to give these people attention and create a potentially dangerous situation. Let's all just stay home and ignore these people and hopefully they'll stand in the rain for a while, realize they're not getting any attention, and they'll go home as well. A lot of discussion about school in the fall. You know, frankly, we just don't know. Whatever plans the schools are making now could change. So the community college and Astoria School District and the other local school districts have all done a great job in preparing for remote learning and doing remote learning now. And we hope that they're able to safely go back to in-classroom school in the fall. But, of course, they're preparing for both prospects. And then I guess the last thing I'll just mention briefly is we continue to be extremely concerned about the long-term budgetary outlook in the state as a result of the economic disaster we're now under. Lottery funds pay for a lot of really important social services and other important state services, and lottery money has basically shut down, and that's going to have huge economic impacts, the loss of reduction in income tax and other revenues for the state. We're going to have a shortfall of probably $3 billion or more just for this two-year period. On May 20th in the morning, I think it's at 9 a.m., you can watch online if you want the rollout of the state budget forecast. And that is going to have significant impacts on a lot of programs that we all rely on throughout the state. So as close to political as I will get is simply to say I don't advocate for any particular candidates ever, but as you're looking at people for elected office in the state of Oregon, I would ask those questions about how do you intend to deal with this multi-billion dollar budgetary shortfall that we're going to be facing in our state. And I'd be interested in knowing how the candidates, what their thoughts are on those issues. And with that, I will turn it over for any discussion you want to have, Graham, or any further questions.
Well, thanks, Bruce. And I think I speak for everyone when I just say how fortunate we are to have you in office and what a great job you're doing. And I appreciate that you're working in concert with the other cities. And it just seems like it's as bad as things are, it's a best case scenario for us to have you leading the team. So thank you.
Hey, I appreciate that. It's an honor to be able to serve in this position, and happy to continue doing so. And I appreciate your support. It means a lot.
Well, one question I have for you is, how much do you hear about the impact that this is having on hospitals? Because I have, you know, it was my understanding that the flatten the curve deal was in order to keep hospitals available to treat the people who get COVID-19. But with so few hospitalizations in our county, hospitals are laying off nurses and things. Is this something that you're paying attention to or have any thoughts about?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm on a couple of teleconferences every week where our hospital CEOs are on as well. So we get to hear directly from them on their concerns. Clearly, you know, reducing or eliminating essentially, you know, quote-unquote non-essential medical procedures in the hospital was a smart thing to do initially. But because of the fact that we've been very fortunate not to have had the COVID-19 related hospitalizations in our county, the hospital has been essentially sitting almost empty except for emergencies. And that's a terrible thing for our community because first of all, jobs that have been lost as people have been furloughed, but also the lost revenue. I mean, it's extremely expensive to have a hospital sitting there with nurses and doctors and staff and facilities and not having patients come in and generating revenue. I mean, the hospitals across the nation have been losing an enormous amount of revenue and going into the red, and particularly for rural hospitals, that's been devastating. So, and additionally, there are people have not been going in to get the care that they need because it's not emergency care, and yet it's very important care, which could end up causing backlogged health problems to build up and overflow in the future. So we're certainly glad locally that that guidance is coming out to allow non-essential surgery and other procedures to be done in our hospitals. So it's a huge issue. The lost revenue for our rural hospitals, especially in the state, is very devastating.
So, Bruce, it looks like we've got a caller. Hi, I'm going to put you on the air. Go ahead. What's your comment or question today? That's not a very good comment or question. Well, I encourage you to try to call back. Sorry we lost you there. I wanted to ask you to what extent, and so I think right along with hospitals, one of the things that I worry about are schools. And as things are changing with distance learning or everything's online, you know, access to broadband wireless for people that are trying to learn at home, I'm curious to what extent you see efforts to solve problems on an actual global scale, you know, just thinking bigger than the county, bigger than the state, bigger than our country's response. I think this is a problem that people are facing in almost every country in the world right now. Are there people who are sort of taking the lead, or is there a movement or an effort to create solutions at that global level?
Well, I certainly think that this sort of distance work that a lot of us are engaged in. Yesterday I was on four different Zoom conferences with different groups, in addition to a couple of teleconferences, and a lot of us are doing that regularly throughout each day. And I think a lot of organizations who were very reluctant to ever do any kind of telework in the past, as we're now forced to do telework and remote work and remote learning, we're learning more about how to do it and what makes sense and what doesn't. And I think there'll be some long-lasting changes that come out of this as people realize in some cases they don't need to be physically co-located. They don't need to be physically in an office. I saw an interview yesterday with a major corporation on the East Coast with thousands of employees in a large building in a major metropolitan area who said, you know, we've realized that there's huge functions within our corporation that they're getting just as much work done from home as they were in our office building. So do we really need to spend $400,000 a year leasing this office space if we could let half of our employees stay home and cut our costs by half? So I think there's a lot of that we'll see. Clearly, many, many, many jobs can't be done remotely. They're hands-on jobs, whether it's in direct customer service or performing a function like repairing gas lines or telephone lines. But there are a lot of things that can be done remotely, and I think certainly the opportunity for remote learning is going to be tremendous, especially for perhaps members of underserved populations who have a difficult time getting into a campus. If we realize that some of those programs can actually be done very effectively remotely, then that's an opportunity for people who have been underserved in the past, maybe to get access to services. Telehealth is another one where there's been a great, I think, reluctance among in the medical community and by insurance providers maybe to allow telehealth, as particularly maybe mental health, to be done by telehealth. And now they're seeing that, you know, actually there are many types of medical interventions, whether it's physical medicine or mental health, that can be done through telehealth very effectively. And so why are we requiring people to come into a doctor's office to get certain things done that could be done remotely? So I think a lot of really interesting and beneficial things could come out of this.
Very good. If you're just joining us, this is The Conversation on Coast Community Radio. It's our live call-in show, and today we're speaking with Astoria Mayor Bruce Jones. And I invite you to give us a call and join the conversation with your comments or question. We do have a caller. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm wondering if the mayor can shed light on why the county decided, I appreciate they're closing the gates at Sunset Beach and Delray over the weekends, because I actually live in that community at Sunset Beach. However, they're opening the gates at noon on Sunday, and how does that make any sense? And I wonder if you can comment on that.
Yeah, so, and I apologize, I don't have the latest county press release. So that was last weekend. Have you seen the update for this weekend to know?
I
just don't have the hours in front of me.
Weekend
is it noon this weekend as well?
Friday in the evening. And in the past, they've kept it closed until like Monday morning. And it's
I know that there was some input that was given to the county from local folks in Warrenton and Gearhart that indicated that they felt there's a larger amount of traffic that came in on Friday and Saturday, and that people tended to be leaving. people that weren't from around here leaving to go home by midday Sunday. So I would assume that was the rationale behind that.
Okay. Okay, because it's been basically the 4th of July every weekend here on the beach.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Seaside, effective Monday, Seaside's beaches will be open 7 days a week, but the county decided to stick with the weekend closures. And, yeah, I just pulled up that press release. Yeah, so you're right, 10 p.m. Friday until noon on Sunday. And, I think it's because the thought was the main crowds that we want to keep off are Saturday and Sunday morning, and then by noon, people that aren't from around here are tending to leave. So that was the rationale behind it.
Okay. Hey, thanks for everything you're doing, Graham and Mayor. Appreciate all these updates.
Thanks for the call. Okay, I'm going to try to do some fancy footwork and get our next caller patched through here. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I'd like to ask if we're still scheduled for tour trips this fall. And if we are, I'd like to know why the town favors this. Its economic help to the town is relatively minor, and the ships are simply floating petri dishes for not only COVID-19, but for other infections. It seems to me a danger that has occurred to ports up and down the West Coast, but somehow we haven't listened to what they're saying. So if he could speak to that, I'd like to have him do it.
Sure. So I'm not sure what the caller means by we haven't listened or shared the concerns. We canceled cruise ships very early. We put in restrictions on cruise ships and prohibited them from coming into the Port of Astoria very early on. And currently, actually, there's national guidance on cruise ships. Cruise ships aren't sailing basically through July. Now, let's keep in mind there's two types of quote-unquote cruise ships that come to Astoria. There's the river cruisers. There are about a half dozen boats that do regularly scheduled week-long cruises on the Columbia River. They go actually from Lewiston, Idaho, to Astoria. They have anywhere from a few dozen passengers to a total cruise size of about 250, with maybe 180 passengers and 70 crew for the largest river cruise ship. And then there are the large ocean-going cruise ships as well. Within the city of Astoria, we met jointly with Clatsop County Public Health and the Port of Astoria, and together we jointly issued a statement that said we consider a cruise ship to be a public gathering for the purposes of the governor's executive order, because the governor has provided no guidance whatsoever on cruise ships in terms of how they would be regulated. They're completely eliminated. They're not mentioned in her guidance. So we said, well, in order to protect the community, let's consider a cruise ship to be a public gathering. And as you know, the governor has issued restrictions on the size of public gatherings. They're now permitted up to 25 people. So the guidance that I have reiterated as recently as yesterday to cruise companies that asked was that the governor currently restricts public gatherings to 25 people, and we consider a cruise ship by definition to be a public gathering. And so any cruise ship with more than 25 people would be prohibited. So that's how we're dealing with it right now. As far as the ocean-going cruise ships, there's two seasons in Astoria. They essentially go roughly in March through the 1st of July, and then again in September and October. And the reason is in the first part of the year, there are ships that are heading to Alaska. And on the way to Alaska, they do a cruise that hits the West Coast. And then in the fall, the Alaska ships are going back to California or other parts of the world, and they come back down the West Coast. So all of the first half of that year, they're all canceled. There will be no cruise ships at all, through the summer. Whether or not they come in the fall, we haven't imposed requirements on that. We're waiting to see how the coronavirus pandemic proceeds. We don't know what the situation is going to be like in August or September. So in the same way that the schools have not yet made a decision on what happens on the first day of school this fall, there's no decisions yet on cruise ships as well. But certainly, we're watching it very closely.
All right. I think we've answered that question. Thank you so much, Bruce. And let me get our next caller patched through here. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Is this for me?
This is you. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, good. Thanks. Thank you both for this tremendous show every week. It is so helpful. I'm concerned that cities and counties and individual businesses are defying the governor's orders plus the CDC guidelines. And I'm wondering, what can the governor do? Does she have any enforcement powers to make people behave appropriately?
What kind of things are you not seeing enforced?
Are
there any specifics?
People coming to the beaches anyway, people defying the stay at home. I've heard, I don't know for sure firsthand, some businesses are trying to open. And there's a case to be made that Seaside opening, or the proposed opening that they want to do, is defying the governor's stay at home orders. So I just wonder what she can do in response to keep the rest of us safe.
Yeah, so thanks for your question. And in terms of preventing people from defying the governor's order to not do non-essential travel more than 50 miles from home, there's very little that we can do to enforce that. Because the only way we could enforce that was if we had some sort of enforcement arm that would approach people, ask for identification, ask for proof of residence, ask for proof that they have business being here and aren't just on a leisure trip. And that's just something that would involve, you know, police powers beyond which we currently have. And so we aren't imposing that. The state has not imposed that. We're relying, you know, for good or ill, we're relying primarily on people being responsible. Clearly not everyone is responsible, but the premise of that whole restriction on non-essential travel is that hoping that most people will be responsible and won't go on day trips, to other parts of the state. But clearly there are people who are doing that, who are coming out here on the weekends or during the week in violation of the governor's order. And unfortunately, there's not an enforcement mechanism for that. In regards to your question on reopening, I mean, I share the concern, as do most of the mayors in Clatsop County, that to open hotels to leisure travel before the governor lifts the prohibition on non-essential travel is essentially asking people to violate that restriction on non-essential travel. So why would we do that?
Right. So essentially the order is an order, but there's no effective, practical, democratic enforcement. Is that correct?
That is correct. There's an order on every resident of the state to not do non-essential travel, but to to arrest people for being away from their home. I mean, that would, as you can imagine, involve a whole other set of issues. So we continue to, just urge people to be responsible, to comply with the spirit and the intent of the governor's order.
Well, and Mayor Jones, I would like to say that you are setting a stellar example for everybody. So thank you for your responsible leadership. And thanks to the station, too, for providing so much information. Thank you, Graham.
Well, I will say thank you to Joanne Rideout and the rest of our news department on that end. So thank you for that call.
Sure, bye.
Yeah, bye. And so, Bruce, I guess just to sort of wrap it up, the one last note that I would have is, considering the cultural and psychological impact of this long term, and so looking forward to a day when we can, when we're invited back into, say, the Liberty Theater for a concert, what are you going to think when you look at the person next to you, or when you do start standing within 6 feet of people, or when you do stop wearing your mask? You know, I just worry about the psychological impact of this on people long term, in terms of just our humanity and our ability to, we've already kind of struggled, I think, with some divisiveness in our country. And, you know, the default is to sort of size the other person up and say, well, are you on my team or not? And this is just another way of, you know, it's another manifestation of, are you on my team or not? Are you wearing your mask? Are you wearing gloves? Are you washing your hands? Are you staying home? Are you not doing leisure travel? And so I don't think this is really a question for you. And I know that you're not a therapist, so I won't make you, you do your disclaimer,
there's a lot wrapped up in that. And certainly it's been very, it's an emotionally trying time for people for different reasons. I mean, people are upset or anxious or concerned for very different reasons. The people that have lost their jobs and have not yet collected unemployment, they're in a terrible position. And I don't pretend to understand what it's like to be in their shoes because I'm not in those shoes. And it would be actually absolutely awful. And then there's other people who are financially secure, who are retired, perhaps, or they're staying home. They're still suffering a lot of stress and anxiety, just worrying about their neighbors and themselves and the community, even though they are not suffering any financial distress whatsoever. And then there's business owners who have spent years investing in their business and have seen their, you know, maybe they were operating with very low margins and just barely making it, and hoping they were going to turn the corner as the economy was booming, and now this happened, and they're worried they're going to lose everything. And so, and then, of course, people that are just concerned for their physical health, and are they going to get sick and be hospitalized and face a critical life-threatening illness.